Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Steve Norman reporting. President Trump on his way to Vietnam this hour, where he will attend the APEC summit. He has just been in China, where he took a softer tone on subjects like North Korea, as well as trade, when meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping.
I have great respect for you for that, because you're representing China. But it's too bad that past administrations allowed it to get so far out of kilter.
Mr. Trump also highlighted his incredibly warm feeling toward President Xi and concluded his remarks by touting his great chemistry with the Chinese leader. U.S. Treasury Department has sanctioned 10 Venezuelans, including a number of government officials, latest step by the Trump administration to pressure Caracas over what it sees as an erosion of democracy. U.S. State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert explained why the sanctions were issued.
They've committed acts of fraud, censorship, and corruption designed to silence the opposition and secure victory for regime candidates.
Nauert and the United States will maintain sanctions on designated Venezuelan government officials until they break from President Nicolas Maduro's dictatorial regime, she says, and support the restoration of democracy and constitutional order. U.S. Defense Chief Jim Mattis says he has discussed Russia's violation of arms control treaty with his NATO counterparts and that they were looking at how to bring Moscow in compliance with it.
With the INF, this is absolutely necessary to sustain confidence in arms control agreements, and we're doing so in a substantial, transparent, and verifiable fashion.
Russia maintaining the U.S. is in breach of the same treaty. This is VOA News. Syrian government forces say they have recaptured the border town of Abu Kamal, the most and last major Islamic State stronghold in eastern Syria. Edward Uranian is following the story.
The Syrian military spokesman said the army and its allies, including Lebanon's pro-Iranian Hezbollah militia, were involved in the effort to drive Islamic State out of Abu Kamal. He said Islamic State militants fled the town after bitter fighting and were being pursued by government forces as they dispersed in several directions. Syrian State TV showed government forces firing long-range artillery at Islamic State militants fleeing into the desert. It is not clear how many Islamic State fighters were in Abu Kamal before the Syrian army recaptured it. Arab media reported there were some pockets of resistance, and pictures inside the town showed widespread destruction. The Syrian army spokesman said government forces were demining roads and buildings booby-trapped by Islamic State. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Iran's Revolutionary Guards have arrested at least 30 dual nationals over the past 2 years. Those arrested mostly face spying charges, according to lawyers, diplomats, and relatives. The number is twice as many as arrests earlier reported and marks a sharp rise from 2015. It also points to a new trend since 19 out of 30 have citizenship in Europe. The guards nor the judiciary did respond for requests for comment. South Korean President Moon Jae-in has unveiled a new policy aimed at deepening ties with Southeast Asia. VOA's Marissa Melton following the story.
The South Korean leader made the announcement as the North Asian economic powerhouse seeks to curb its reliance on traditional trading partners like China and the United States. Indonesia, Southeast Asia's biggest economy, was Moon's first state visit to the region and was accompanied by a delegation of around 200 business leaders. Seoul's new southern policy aims to better connect South Korea to the Association of Southeast Asian Nations and expand the economic influence of Asia's fourth-largest economy in the region, home to more than half a billion people. South Korea's presidential Blue House has said the policy will mirror Moon's new northern policy aimed at expanding cooperation with China, Japan, Russia, and Mongolia. Marissa Melton, VOA News.
And Pope John Paul I, the shortest-lived pope in modern history, has moved a step closer to sainthood. Get more news at our website. You can find us at voanews.com and on the VOA mobile app.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, November 10th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The ICC is to investigate allegations of state-sponsored crimes in Burundi, but the Burundian government says it will not cooperate.
Any action which can be taken by ICC against Burundi will not generate product. Burundi government has judicial institutions which are competent to punish any person who commits these crimes.
Laurentine Kayana is Burundi's justice minister. In Liberia, Senator George Weah's coalition says it will accept nothing less than a timely return to the electoral processes. A call for help to end Africa's illegal migration to Europe. And Zambia's ruling party rejects demands to impeach President Edgar Lungu.
The president was speaking to the chaos that is in Kenya, and he said, don't bring the chaos in Kenya to Zambia. He's telling the judiciary, and he's saying that the judiciary must be independent in carrying out his functions, that the judiciary must not be a copycat of the Kenyan court.
Sunday Chanda is media director for Zambia's ruling Patriotic Front Party. And conservationists urge Uganda to get tough on wildlife trafficking. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. International Criminal Court judges on Thursday authorized prosecutor Fatou Bensouda to investigate allegations of state-sponsored crimes in Burundi, including murder, rape, and torture. Last week, Burundi became the first African country to withdraw from the Rome Statute. But in her statement on Thursday, Bensouda said Burundi has a legal obligation to cooperate with the investigation. As Moses Haviarimana reports from Bujumbura, Burundi says it has no obligation to the ICC.
In April last year, the International Criminal Court launched a preliminary investigation on alleged crimes committed in Burundi since 2015, when the incumbent President Pierre Nkurunziza announced that he could run for another term in the office. According to the ICC, more than 1,000 people were killed since then. Other reports indicated that some government officials, police, the intelligence officials and the Imbonerakure, the ruling party youth wing, allegedly committed crimes against humanity that included torture, rape, murder and forced disappearances. The Burundi Justice Minister Laurentine Kanyana said that the decision made by the ICC is a fraud and that Burundi will not take it into account.
Any action which can be taken by ICC against Burundi will not generate product. Burundi have not any obligation to ICC. Burundi government has judicial institutions which are competent to punish any person who commits these crimes.
On 27th last month, Burundi government officially pulled out from the International Criminal Court after 1 year when the country announced it had started the process to withdraw its membership from the court. The withdrawal was fueled by the International Criminal Court announcing that it has launched a preliminary investigation on the crimes committed in the country since 2015. Tasia Sibomana is a member of the opposition political party in Burundi.
I am satisfied by that, the decision of ICC, because our justice is not able to make the investigations. That is true. There is no volunteer politically, and the consequence is that our justice cannot begin the investigation.
However, the National Independent Human Rights Commission Chairman Jean-Baptiste Baribonekeza said that there's no credible legal basis for the International Criminal Court to carry out the investigations.
We have advised against the opening of an investigation by the ICC. We have recommended, the Burundian judicial system to investigate instead.
As Burundi became the first African country to pull out from the ICC, it is evident that the country will not collaborate with the court to carry out investigations. Moses Haviarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Zambia's ruling Patriotic Front Party says demands by civil society groups and opposition parties to impeach President Edgar Lungu are a mere publicity stunt aimed at scoring cheap political points. President Lungu recently warned the country's judges that a decision to prevent him from seeking re-election in 2021 could plunge Zambia into chaos. The president also said the judges should not be copycats of Kenyan judges who annulled the country's August 8 presidential election, which he said created chaos in the East African country. Opponents condemned President Lungu's remarks and accused him of intimidating the judges. Meanwhile, the Law Association of Zambia has called on President Lungu to retract his statement. Sunday Chanda, media director for the ruling Patriotic Front Party, tells viewers Peter Clotty that the proposed opposition impeachment proceedings are unlikely to succeed.
Our view is that the head of state, who is also the party president, has not committed any impeachable offense. But if it was in their best interest, the MPs and the civil society organizations could exercise their democratic right and move the frivolous motion much to the waste of parliament's time.
The Law Association of Zambia criticized the president for the statement that he made, and some in the civil society and opposition groups have even demanded that President Edgar Chagwa Lungu apologizes. Some see it as an intimidation because the judiciary will soon be ruling regarding his eligibility to contest in the 2021 general election.
Article 122, subsection 4, the Constitution of Zambia places a duty on a public or someone who's holding public office to protect the dignity, independence, and effectiveness of the judiciary. So even when we look at the statement from the Law Association of Zambia, our position was that the statement from LAZ was speculative. They were not even sure themselves if the president had intimidated the judiciary. In their statement, they used one word which stands out. They say they appeared to intimidate the judiciary. And we are saying to the Law Association of Zambia that they cannot be speculative on a matter that is considered to be a serious matter. So even calls and you know, by the Law Association of Zambia that the president, President Lungu, must retract that statement were neither here nor there. The president was on point. The president was speaking to a particular subject matter. The president's comments were in a particular context. There has been information which we, as the ruling party, also have that information that there are some judges who are saying that the courts must rule be as brave as their colleagues in Kenya. And what we are saying is that for the dignity, for the independence and effectiveness of the Zambian judiciary, one cannot take pride in saying that the Zambian court must be a copycat of the Kenyan court.
Some Zambians see the president's statement as very controversial because he categorically stated that if he were to be prevented from seeking re-election in 2021, the country could be plunged into crisis. Some see this as arrogating powers to himself, that without him, the country will be plunged into crisis. The constitution that he swore to, they said, is to protect life and property, and that Zambia is bigger than him.
Now, even that angle, Peter, even that angle was blown out of context because the president was speaking to the chaos that is in Kenya, and he said, don't bring the chaos in Kenya to Zambia. And he's telling the judiciary, and he's saying that the judiciary must be independent, the judiciary must uphold its dignity, the judiciary must be effective in carrying out its functions, the law must be the law, that the judiciary must not be a copycat of the Kenyan court. And it's a no-brainer what has happened in Kenya. And he's saying it's not just about people saying that a brave decision must be taken. Can you interpret the law? And he told the court, let the court do their work. Even people that have said that the president was saying that if I'm not court judgment is not ruled in my favor, then there will be chaos. That was a total misrepresentation by fake media, and that was a fake angle that was taken by some excited online social media in Zambia.
Sunday Chanda is the media director for Zambia's ruling Patriotic Front Party. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Lusaka. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, November 10th. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. In Liberia, Senator George Weah's Coalition for Democratic Change, the CDC, and its collaborative political parties say they will accept nothing less than a timely return to the democratic electoral processes. Weah and Vice President Joseph Boakai, the first and second vote-getters in the country's October 10 presidential election, were supposed to have faced each other in a November 7th runoff. But then the Supreme Court ordered a stay after four political parties, including the ruling United Party, complained of irregularities in the first round vote. At its first official news conference since the court ruling, the CDC called on all stakeholders, including the National Elections Commission, to put the electoral process back on course, including a runoff election.
While respecting the decision of the Supreme Court of the Republic, placing a stay order on the runoff election, we call on all stakeholders, including the National Elections Commission, to act timely in setting back on course the electoral process and get the runoff election conducted and concluded, reflective of the wishes and aspirations of the Liberian people. We make this call in the interest of the country and for the general good of the people. This is a matter of national urgency needed to avoid unanticipated consequences that could attend our failure to do so. The Coalition for Democratic Change and its collaborating political parties will accept nothing less than a timely return to these democratic electoral processes as indicated. We believe that if the runoff election is not held to permit transition of power as required by the Constitution of the Republic, the attending situation could ultimately draw the nation into unnecessary crisis. CDC and its collaborating political parties maintain that the Constitution of Liberia under no circumstance should be compromised. The coalition remains committed to a smooth, democratic, constitutional transition. And any attempt to hijack this process through political artifices, schemings, and filibustering will be rejected by the coalition of opposition parties in no uncertain terms.
The CDC also called on its supporters to remain peacefully engaged, law-abiding, and to ignore all provocations that might delay what it calls the coalition's victory.
Being true to our word, the coalition and its collaborating political parties again pledge our renewed commitment to a peaceful, non-violent electoral process and the timely conclusion thereof, as required by the Constitution and laws of Liberia. Notwithstanding, the CDC and its collaborating political parties will not countenance any extra constitutional undemocratic governance arrangement at the expiry of the current Unity Party administration.
The CDC called on the international community to stand on the side of democracy and the Liberian people to ensure a successful and timely conclusion of the ongoing electoral process.
We call on the Mana River Union, the Economic Community of West African States, the African Union, the United Nations, and the international community at large to take careful note of the unfolding developments relating to the current electoral process and do all to ensure that Liberia's fledgling multi-party democracy is reinforced.
The National Elections Commission of Liberia is currently looking into allegations of irregularities during the October 10th election filed by four political parties. The European Union ambassador to the Gambia has called for global intervention to help end Africa's high rate of illegal migration to Europe. Ambassador Attila Lahoz made the call during a migration conference organized by the Gambian government in collaboration with the International Organization for Migration. Many Gambian youths have died over the years in the Sahara Desert and on the Mediterranean Sea while trying to illegally cross into Europe. Pandere Umbai reports.
Economic stagnation and massive unemployment have been the main driving force behind Gambia's alarming youth illegal migration to Europe. Thousands have fled the country over the years due to economic hardship. Many Gambian youngsters believe that Europe is the promised land, hence many have resorted to the risky journey, locally known as the back way to Europe. Attila Lajo is the European Union ambassador to the Gambia.
We witnessed, just last year only, an estimated 5,143 dead or missing migrants in the Mediterranean. Too often, we hear about the difficulties encountered by African migrants stuck in Libya, exposed to torture, violence, slavery, and kidnapping, many of whom are our Gambian brothers and sisters. These stories cannot fall on deaf ears.
The EU ambassador therefore underscores the need for global intervention to help end the illegal migration scourge.
The need for national governments and the international community as a whole to come together to address issues surrounding migration has become more imperative.
The Gambia has been faced with an economic downturn for years under the leadership of the exiled Gambian dictator Yahya Jammeh. This was largely attributed to official corruption and poor human rights record. The government was the main employer, as the private sector was virtually dead under Jammeh's rule. Private businesses also grossly underperformed, while foreign direct investment, FDI, was very limited. Lamine Camara is the Deputy Permanent Secretary at the Ministry of Interior. Mr. Camara comments on the situation of illegal migration.
Despite being a relatively small country in terms of population, the Gambia has had high amount of nationals attempting to cross via Libya to Italy. In 2015 and 2016, the Gambia had one of the highest numbers of citizens crossing the Mediterranean. As the nature of migration is illegal, it is difficult to obtain concrete figure on the number leaving the Gambia.
The European Union, the United Nations Development Programme, UNDP, and other developmental partners have been supporting the Gambian government to help arrest illegal migration, funding entrepreneurship projects, and providing skilled training for Gambian youths is part of the agenda. The UNDP representative to the Gambia has reaffirmed her office commitment to complementing government efforts to make Gambian youth productive.
We're partners and we're very much interested in development, economic development of the Gambia, and see areas where we can support as the United Nations and as partners to development to address this issue of illegal migration.
Youths account for 65% of the Gambian population. The new government of President Adama Barrow is working with UN agencies such as the International Organization for Migration to help reshuttle some of the stranded Gambian youths in Libya. Just this past week, another batch of Gambian migrants in Libya were airlifted back to the country. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandere Mbai reporting.
Uganda's government has been on a mission to ramp up tourism. One of its strategies has been to promote wildlife conservation with a new slogan, "Poaching steals from us all." But wildlife trafficking may be the bigger problem. An investigation earlier this year by the Washington-based Enough Project identified Uganda as a key transit point for illegal wildlife products leaving East and Central Africa. Halima Atumani reports for VOA from Kampala.
The message is simple: protect our wildlife, and several local Ugandan celebrities are delivering it.
Our elephants, lions, and gorillas are facing so many threats. We need our wildlife. It brings in the tourists who bring in the money. So let's all sing the same song. Stand up for our wildlife. course, poaching steals from us all.
Home to some 5,000 elephants, ivory seizures in Uganda have been rising. Authorities have intercepted a total of 12 tons of ivory in the past 6 years. But poaching in Uganda has been on the decline. The last spike was in 2011 with 25 elephants killed that year, according to the Uganda Wildlife Authority.
Since then, we've been losing a maximum of about 15, 10. So that wouldn't be the source of the tons and tons of ivory that we are seeing. So this ivory is definitely coming from all corners of Africa. We have seized ivory that has been traced as far as Angola. Of course, some as far as Tanzania, DRC, South Sudan.
Conservationists say raising local awareness is good, but that Uganda must also take a stronger stance on wildlife trafficking. In Tanzania, people trafficking wildlife products can face up to 10 years in prison. In Kenya...
Rosalima Atumani reporting from Kampala, Uganda. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. Good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin with the third and last round of AFCON qualifiers for the Russia 2018 FIFA World Cup, scheduled to close this weekend, with three of the five spots at next year's tournament still to be determined. Egypt and Nigeria have secured their spots, but there is still all to play for in groups A, C, and D. Nigerian coach Gerard Ross says he will field his best team against Algeria.
All the games are important. It's right that we are already qualified, so the result, it's not the most important. The most important in this game will be to make a good game. It's an opportunity to see a lot of players who didn't play so much in the qualifiers because we had our team and now we have six injuries.
In Group A, Tunisia only require 1 point at home to Libya to return to the World Cup stage for the first time since 2006. In the event of a Libyan victory, the Carthage Eagles of Tunisia could still make it if Congo DR fail to defeat Guinea. Ghana may already be out of the running for the FIFA World Cup Russia 2018, but the Black Stars coach Kwesi Appiah says his team is motivated to end the campaign positive as they host Egypt in the ultimate game at Cape Coast on Sunday.
Make sure that we play our hearts out, we do not let the nation down, and we just need everyone to come over here and support us.
In the other game, it will be Congo versus Uganda, and Uganda's interim coach Moses Basena is forever grateful for the dream chance to manage at the biggest stage in Ugandan football.
For me to lead the country into these very important games, it's been a honor and a pleasure for me.
In Group C, which include Cote d'Ivoire, Morocco, Gabon and Mali, the situation is quite simple. The Moroccans will qualify if they avoid defeat against Cote d'Ivoire in Abidjan on Saturday. The Ivorians, meanwhile, must win if they are to top the group and pip Morocco to take the spot for Group C. Still on the World Cup African qualifiers, South Africa, Senegal, Burkina Faso and Cape Verde make up Group D. On paper, all of the teams in the group have a chance of qualifying, especially as there are actually three matches still to be played, including South Africa, Senegal, which originally took place in November 2016, but will now be replayed on the 10th of November 2017, following FIFA's decision. In the event of Senegal pocketing 3 points in South Africa, there will be assured of finishing in first place and traveling to Russia next year. And away from the qualifiers, the bitter infighting over who runs Sierra Leone football has taken a remarkable twist with FIFA overturning a decision by the country's national FA to remove Isha Johansson from her role as president, right in the middle of a court case in which she is charged with corruption. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your reporting on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. International Criminal Court judges on Thursday authorized prosecutor Fatou Bensouda to investigate allegations of state-sponsored crimes in Burundi, including murder, rape, and torture. But Burundi says it has no obligation to the ICC. And that's it for this Friday, November 10th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good weekend.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Van Dee, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.